We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we've got Sabrina Trobach, who is a counselor. And actually, Sabrina, as I was looking through your bio, you're in Fort St. John, B.C. We seem to have a run of guests on from B.C. recently, which warms my heart as somebody who lives in Victoria.
There you go. Yes.
So, Sabrina, tell us a little bit about your practice, and you have a particular focus on trauma and helping people recover from trauma and abuse.
Right. So the model of therapy I practice focuses on a person's core belief. So for people, that core belief is feeling not good enough, not important, not valued, and the kind of the end goal is feeling more good enough, important, and valued. Now, nobody's core belief is 100% one or the other, but what we generally find is people who just aren't really very happy or content in their life. They've had a lot of past trauma. They have anxiety, depression, those kind of things. Often that core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued, is more significant. So what I do in my model of therapy is we're going back and looking through life's experiences and trying to kind of figure out how that core belief has developed over the years. And then we're resolving that past trauma, those past experiences. And as that is happening, that core belief is shifting to feeling more good enough, important, and valued.
Yeah, and you know, that whole process of values and beliefs is fundamental also to the practitioners who focus on NLP, and it's really part of a reset. How, you know, people who are, our fundamental belief on the show is there's no one path to healthy. There's a combination of routes which is unique for each individual. The individuals who are coming to you, how are they accessing care and help that is different at the stage they are than somebody who is just starting their journey and trying to figure out what's going on?
You know, I see a variety of different clients. I see clients who have been, you know, we almost call it kind of therapy eyes. They have been in therapy after therapy after therapy after therapy for years and years and years. And then I also see a lot of clients who've never gone to counseling before, never really talked about anything. So it really is kind of adapting to meet the needs of the individual clients. I was a learning assistant teacher for 20 years before I started counseling. So I'm pretty good at being able to figure out where each person is kind of at and how do I adapt and modify things to better meet their needs and figure out where they are. And so, you know, this model of therapy, it's focusing on the core belief, but we use about 14 different modalities of therapy in being able to meet the needs of each client.
Right. Now, that makes sense. And let's go to values and beliefs because, you know, it's fundamental to becoming healthy is to reset your values, to understand you are good enough, you are important, you are valued, that you're capable and you deserve to be loved, to be cared about. That's something which a lot of people fundamentally are missing in their lives. How can people get beyond that without resetting? Or is it possible? How do they open the door?
You know, I'm not really sure your definition of resetting and what I'm doing are probably kind of similar. We're really going back and figuring out what are the pathways that have been developed in the brain for decades and decades and decades, and how do we go back and create new pathways with this different kind of focusing? So a big part of doing that is we have to go deeper.
Right.
If someone has anxiety, we often go, okay, well, these are strategies you can use to help you cope with your anxiety. Whereas in this model of therapy, we're going, well, why do you have anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
How has it started? Let's go back and look at how these experiences that you've been through, and more importantly, how they were dealt with, often just avoided, pushed down, don't feel the emotions. How right. does that contribute to that anxiety? If I've had a lot of tough things that have gone on in my life and they were never really dealt with, they were just brushed aside, brushed aside, brushed aside. Well, now I'm full up with emotion.
Right.
So my ability to believe in myself that I can handle even just daily things is going to be a lot more challenging because there's no more room. I have no more capacity for that emotion. So we're going back and we've got to sort through and let people teach people how to feel their emotions, sort through their emotions, let go of all that stuff. So, you know, we call it more resolving than reset, but we're really going back and sorting through that stuff so we can let it go.
Yeah.
And then when something happens today, it's just about today. It's not triggering all this past stuff that's been going on for years and years.
Yeah. Clearing that history is key to moving forward. And, you know, the reality is it's almost, you know, from what I've gone through with some of the, and dealing with some people in the practice, it's almost like you acknowledge it happened, you put it in a box behind you, so that it, and recognize that when you're feeling the triggers today, if you ever do, it's take a moment and realize it's not happening to you today. What are some great coping mechanisms that people can need to learn or should need to learn that are key to being able to move forward?
I mean, there's lots and lots of different strategies that we can mm-hmm. use with what you're just saying. I think one of the key things is we have to get better at recognizing the difference between a thought and an yep. emotion.
Yes.
And getting better at just identifying and feeling those emotions and letting them out. You know, past traumas, the past, it's over. It's done with. The experience is gone. We can't go back. We can't change it. It is over.
Yep.
What we carry with us is the emotional impact of that experience. And so that's where we have to get better. If I can sort through and feel my emotions and let them out, then I don't have to keep carrying them. So things that happened, you know, when I was 10, when I was 11, when I was 13, when I was 17, felt powerless, 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 powerless. Now something happens today and I feel powerless. It's not just about today. It's about all those other times that I felt that and just stuffed that emotion down. So the better I get at being able to feel my emotions and let them out, the better I'm going to be able to cope more with daily things and sort through. And really, that's how you let go of the past experience, is you've got to let out that emotion and then gain a better understanding of the impact and the kind of the more neutral truth around the past experiences. A lot of people who are survivors of different kinds of traumas blame themselves.
Yes.
It's just the way our brain works. We are very, you know, egocentric, me, 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 me. But that also yep. means I'm blaming myself when things go wrong.
Yep.
So being able to sort through and talk through that and kind of see a bit of a different perspective, understand a little bit more about what was happening and why it was happening, then I can let that go more. I can feel the emotions, understand it. Now it is really just a box on a shelf in my memory.
So you wrote the book, Not Good Enough. And that statement is a core piece, which we're talking about here, which is the feelings of, you know, we blame ourselves. And fundamentally, it's we weren't good enough to get ourselves out of the position, to not put ourselves in that position. And as a result, we're not good enough. That's fundamental to, and overcoming that is fundamental to overcoming anxiety.
For sure.
And so tell us a bit about the book and how one's perception about whether we're good enough or not blends and affects our core beliefs and how we are affected by anxiety.
So the book and the model of therapy I practice sees that anxiety is actually a symptom of that core belief. So that core belief kind of drives everything that we do. We're drawn to people, experiences, the way we perceive things, choices on healthy and unhealthy coping strategies, all come back to reinforcing and supporting that core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued. So if my core belief is not good enough, I'm not going to believe in myself as much that I can handle things. I'm going to have more self-doubt, more insecurity. That's what anxiety is. Mm-hmm. Anxiety is lack of confidence, not believing in myself I can handle things. So a lot of people say, you know, anxiety is about the trigger, right? I have anxiety of driving on the highway. Well, if it was anxiety of driving on the highway, then every single person should have that. Not everyone does.
Yep.
If I don't believe in myself, I can handle it, I'm going to have anxiety. If I believe I can handle it, I'm not going to have anxiety. So anxiety is a reflection of our belief in ourselves that is developed through that core belief, not good enough, not important, not valued.
And tell us about the journey to write the book. It's obviously, you know, there's a personal route to that, but there's also the experience of having worked with so many people. Tell us a bit about how you came to write it.
So I was a learning assistant teacher for 20 years, learned about this model of therapy, started my own private practice. Within 6 months, I had a waiting list. We're going back, resolving past trauma, sorting through and challenging and changing that core belief. That's a long-term model of therapy. Yep. So most of my clients are with me a year and a half, 2 years. So I started my private practice in 2010. I've always had a waiting list within 6 months. Sometimes it's 6 months. Sometimes it's up to a year and a half. I hate having to tell people, sorry, there's nothing I can do there. You know, you got a year and a half waiting list. I can put your name on the list.
Right.
So that's where the book kind of came from. I never, ever, ever in my life ever thought about being an author or writing a book. But I wanted to provide a resource for people who can't access counseling for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And so I just slowly started kind of picking away at the book. Took me really 7 years to get it into print. The first 5 years I was a, you know, single mom with two kids and working full time as a counselor. And so it was just kind of here and there when I had time poking away at it. Then I took a year with a publisher where we really focused and worked on it and got it edited. And then it took about another year to kind of get it into publishing and ready to go. And so the book really is helping the reader figure out and gain an understanding of where is my core belief? How significant is it? How is it appearing in my life? Because when we start, I start talking with my clients about it, they often go, oh, I never knew. You're speaking to the choir here, but I never had an idea or understood that's what this was.
Right.
So it's helping people gain a better understanding of that, then looking at the connection between core belief and anxiety, core belief and anger, coping strategies, healthy coping strategies, emotions, what are different emotions? What do they feel like physically in our body? So it kind of takes you through and helps you gain more awareness and understanding, gives you more tools. All of those things are developing that core belief, good enough, important, and valued.
And, you know, good enough, important, valued is key. I think the outcome we all have to have through a therapeutic process and the process, any of which we're dealing with, our traumas, abuses, demons, and the like. One of the things you mentioned in there was, you know, you started working in the schools and, you know, developed more and more of your practice over time. And in the schools, of course, you're dealing with a lot of family dynamics. And if we don't address our demons, our traumas, and challenges early, we end up passing those on to our children. Yeah. And those family dynamics then rear their heads in ways we can't expect. That's when you're approaching it in the schools, you're approaching the entire family at that point. But the children are the ones who we can break the cycle for going forward so they don't repeat it. With those groups, what was the difference in terms of the parents and the kids in terms of opening up and responding to the opportunity?
So when I started my own private practice, I left the schools and I assumed I probably would be working with kids. But what I realized fairly quickly is things roll downhill much easier than they roll uphill. So it's much easier for me to actually work with the parents and help the parents change and their approaches, their way of handling, be more present, listening more, all those kind of things, it's going to have a positive impact on the kids. So in my practice, I work almost mainly, well, always with adults. If I'm working with the child, the condition is I also need to work with the parents. And so ideally, I love to work with the young ones who don't have any kids yet.
Right.
And pass that on.
Exactly.
Right? You know, in the schools, the mandate really is put out the fires. And that's all the school is really capable of doing. This is much deeper. It's looking at, you know, why is the fire burning in the first place? And so it doesn't really fit with what's, you know, what there's space for in the school system. So that was a big part of why I left the school, was because I wanted to go much deeper. I didn't want to just kind of keep this kid calm and settled throughout the day. I wanted to help them feel more good enough, important, and valued. And to do that, I really have to work with the parents. You know, people often ask me, when does a core belief start? Honestly, before you're even born.
Yep.
Because your parents are helping and creating and developing your core belief. So if you have two parents whose core belief is not good enough, they can only teach you so much.
That's right.
And so we have to work at that level in making those changes and doing things differently.
So as you're working with parents who come to you and who haven't yet resolved and reset, fundamentally, though, they need to still be able to start passing on better practices to their kids early on. How do you teach people to do that while they're still trying to resolve and heal themselves?
That's a good question. And usually the first part of the practice is really spending a lot of time on looking at that family dynamics and what are some things that we can change in that family right off the get-go before we're even really digging in too much about the parents' core belief, to try to make some differences in the family dynamics so things are looking a bit differently. So one of the things we often talk about to help parents see that is I often ask, what do you think that experience was like for your child? So my child came home from school. They'd been lying to me. They failed their social studies test and they didn't tell me. And so they came home. I found out the teacher told me, I got mad, blah, 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 whatever it is.
Yep.
So then we talk about, what do you think that was like for your child?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think your child needed in that moment?
Yeah.
Why do you think your child didn't tell you? What's your part in that? So we really start to kind of break things down and get a much deeper understanding of what's really going on. Then we can see things a bit differently and do things a bit differently. One of the things I always talk about with parents is, what's your parenting goal?
Right.
Most of them say, what? What do you mean? Right. Well, what's your goal? What's your end goal of parenting? When your child is, you know, 18, 19, moving out of the house, what do you want for them?
Right.
Well, I want them to be happy. No, not realistic. We don't wake up. We're not happy every day. Go deeper.
Yep.
Well, I want them to be confident. I want them to be independent. I want them to be reliant. I want them to be able to have connections and be open to being vulnerable with other people. So we write down a list of what are your parenting goals? And then I say to them, put it on your fridge. And with every decision you make, stop and think, am I helping my child reach this goal? If you are, keep doing it.
Right.
But if you're not, stop. How can you redo that situation or adapt what you're going to do to help support and build that goal? Most of us don't really do that. We're just in the minute. Life's busy.
We don't take a lot of time to reflect.
Right. And to think that long term, right? We just react, respond, react, respond, react, respond. I know what I don't want to do.
Yep.
I haven't really figured out what I do want to do. And so we have to really break that down into small steps to gain a better understanding.
Is there an inflection point for most people which you notice that is the moment they choose to open up and come forward to address where they're at in life? Is there something that tends to be common?
Yeah, there's usually a crisis.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, someone getting sick, getting fired from work, getting in a fight with my partner, you know, my child is talking about suicide. There's usually some sort of a crisis where now there's no more room for anything else. So I need help. And so that's often when people reach out. Again, problem with that is in my counseling, it's like, you got to wait 6 months. I can't get in to see you any sooner.
Yep.
Right. But that's almost always what it is. When things are going well and things are kind of moving along, even if you're not really happy, but it's kind of status quo, not a lot of growth, not a lot of change that's going to happen. When there's crisis, that's often when we see more change in people where they want to do things differently. So usually when I get the call, that is when something has happened that has caused a big bump in the road. And now they're kind of more scrambling, more desperation to help, more willing to reach out.
Right. And yeah, you mentioned 6 months. I know in most of North America, it's a 10-month wait to see a counselor. And even if kids go to, like here in Victoria, they have an organization called The Foundry, which is for kids' mental health or youth mental health. And kids who are suicidal go there, but they're told that it's a 10-month wait. And that's unacceptable that anybody has to wait that long when they are suicidal. But, you know, that's not your fault. It is a problem with the system as a whole.
Right.
But that's where books like yours are helpful, that people can pick them up and they know they need help. At least they can start down that process.
Why I wrote the book.
Yeah. And people who want to pick up the book, learn more, where can they find it? How can they reach out to you or learn more about what you do and how you approach the problems?
Sure. So, the kind of catch-all place is my website, throwbackholistic.org.
How do you spell that?
T-R-O-B as in Bob, A-K-H-O-L-I-S-T-I-C.org. And on my website, there is a page of my book, and it's got links to different places where you can purchase it from. It is available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Chapters Indigo, and Friesen Press as well. There's a page on there that's blogs. So it's got a lot of 2 to 4 minute reads. So just short, quick reads that gives you a little bit of information around mental health. I always also have a page on there that's got the podcast interviews that I've done as well. I'm on Facebook and YouTube at Throwback Holistic Counseling. I am on TikTok at NGE. So not good enough _core_belief. And I'm on Instagram at NGE_throwback.
Wonderful. So there's lots of ways for people to access the information and learn more about and from you.
You bet.
Wonderful. Well, we are out of time for the day, but I'd like to thank you for joining us on the show, Shalabina.
Thanks for having me. It was nice to be here.
And thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky with High on Healthy, and we'll be back again with you soon.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.